I'm David, I'm the senior pastor, and we're halfway through a series of sermons on the culture of honour. And I want to read from John chapter 13 by way of intro to this morning. So John chapter 13 and verse 1. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, that he had come from God and was returning to God. And so he got up from the meal. He took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You don't realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." Peter said, No, you shall never wash my feet." But Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Well then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my head and my hands as well." Jesus answered, "A person who's had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him. And that was why he said not everyone was clean. When Jesus had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and he returned to his place. "Do you understand what I've done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that's what I am. But now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you would be blessed if you do them." Many of you will have noticed that Cardiff isn't exactly short of pubs. They include some interesting names. You've got the Dickensian-sounding Fagin's Ale. You got the unattractively named Gassy Jack's. You got the rather manic sounding Ha Ha Bar. I only know this because I looked it up, incidentally. And you've even got a pub that helpfully predicts what students can expect if they spend too much time there. And it's called 0 Degrees. It would be interesting if churches were named like pubs. And a good name for one would be the Towel and Basin Church, based on John chapter 13. It's not a bad summary of what a church should be about, because here's Jesus and his disciples. They've spent the day on the road traveling. The weather is hot, the roads are unmade and dusty. In addition, a lot of the neighborhood household waste ends up on the street. Discarded food waste, orange and lemon peel, meat bones and so on. Any amount of animals, from dogs to donkeys, have deposited their waste on the open roads. And unlike Wales, where you get a nice cleansing rain to wash the muck away every couple of hours, what's put there stays there. Filthy, smelling, often disgusting. And the road into Jerusalem at Passover time will be especially busy, so you can expect them to be especially foul. And Jesus' disciples have been walking along these roads in open sandals. So they arrive at the destination. They're reclining in readiness for a meal. And it should be a nice, relaxing atmosphere, but it isn't. The atmosphere, in fact, is tense and it's frankly rancid, because normally when you come into a house after a long journey like that, the slave or the least important person there would take responsibility for washing the feet of each guest. And it isn't, of course, a pleasant job, but it is necessary. And the question is, who's going to do it? The answer in that room seems to be nobody. because this group of 12 disciples are sitting in awkward silence. None of them think that it is their job to wash the feet of the others. It isn't their gift. It isn't their passion. And anyway, they're really rather too important for that kind of a role. And so there's deadlock around the table. And the atmosphere is heavy with muck and sweat and rivalry and distrust and pride until the boss quietly gets up from the table. He ties a towel around his waist. He pours water into a bowl. And then he goes round the table, kneeling at the feet of each of his followers, one by one, washing away the grime and the muck. Jesus gives honor to each of those 12 disciples as he kneels and he serves them. And there are a number of important things to notice in this incident, and I want to pick out four this morning. The first is this, and it's a very obvious one, that what Jesus does here is an example and a paradigm for us. There is, of course, more than one dimension to what Jesus does in washing his disciples' feet, but this is for sure one of them. And verse 12 to 14, Jesus comes back to his place. He says, "Do you understand what I've done? You call me Lord and teacher. And that's what I am. But now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I've set you an example that you should do as I've done for you." In other words, Jesus is setting a template for our life as disciples together, as our life together as Christians. Not just actually in his action, but he's also laying down a template in what lay behind it. We are to have the same motivation. Verse 1 says that having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. And this is an act of love, and love is to be at the heart of the community that we share and the things that we do together as Christians. We are to act from the same resource. Verse 3 and 4 says that Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, that he had come from God and he was returning to God. And so he got up. And the resource behind his getting up and doing the necessary thing there is the status and the relationship that he has with the Father. The act of servanthood is possible because Jesus is secure in his own identity and his worth in God. And that should be true for us. And we can honor one another, not because we think that we're unimportant, but because we're secure in knowing that we are important, that we know who we are in God, that we're secure in his love for us. So the same resource. And we are to have the same willingness, not to demand honor from each other, but to give honor through service. It's always a choice. Two little boys are playing. They end up squabbling. Murray calls them together and says, "Well, look, why? Jimmy and Freddie, why are you fighting like this?" And it turns out that each of them wants the ball, so they end up fighting over it. And Mummy, who's a Christian, remonstrates with them. And I don't think Jesus would fight, would he? I think Jesus would say, "You have the first go, and then I can play with the ball later. Now, do you think you can do that and play nicely?" Both boys nod their heads. And then the older brother turns to his sibling and says, "Okay, you can be Jesus." Now, the Lord is inviting us to turn that around and be prepared to say, "Look, I'll be Jesus in this situation. I will serve. I will give honor." And in case his disciples don't yet grasp the point, Jesus hammers it home in verse 17 by concluding, "Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." So that's the first thing. What Jesus does here is an example and a paradigm for us. Secondly, what Jesus does here is regardless of merit in the person who's being served. As Jesus goes round that table, it's a motley crew, isn't it? He comes to Simon Peter, who is about to deny him three times. He goes past James and John, who've just had a blazing row with the rest of the disciples because they want to be top dog and they're fighting for status. He comes to Thomas, who still hasn't made up his mind about whether he fully trusts Jesus or not. Thomas the doubter. In fact, he comes to 11 different disciples who will run for their lives when danger comes and they'll leave Jesus stranded. And he comes to one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, who will do something far worse, because Judas Iscariot is about to sell his friend for money. All of this Jesus knows. None of that is hidden to him. He serves them nonetheless, regardless of merit. Actually, that's, of course, a bit of a theme in Jesus' teaching, isn't it? In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, says this in verse 44, 45. I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, because he causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And God, in his grace and providential mercy, is irrespective of who he blesses. He blesses those who have no merit at all, including us. So should we. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, you take two of the most famous parables of Jesus. The parable of the Good Samaritan, the Samaritan stoops down to serve a man who should be his enemy, because he's a Samaritan, the other guy is a Jew. They are enemies, and he sees him as being totally unworthy, but he still chooses to serve. In the parable of the prodigal son, the father runs out to greet his son who has betrayed him and squandered the wealth of the family, and he honors him with the best robe, with the new shoes on his feet, and a celebration banquet. And it is, of course, that so scandalizes the older brother, who's been plodding on worthily all the time that his brother has been a waster. And he says, you can't do this. Why should you be honoring him? But honoring through service for Jesus is not just for those that we deem to be worthy. It is for everyone. It is for the guy in your home group who's made lots of wrong choices and lost the plot. It is for the leadership of your church or your CU or whatever, who may have got a lot wrong in your eyes and be far from the way that God wants us to be. It is for folks in a church where nothing that you do for them is right. And I've been in a church like that where absolutely anything that you do, you know that half the church is going to be up in arms. But we're not serving people because they deserve it. We're serving people because the Lord has called us to. When Jesus calls on us to serve one another, it isn't just those that we're drawn to, not just those who look as though they deserve it. It is everyone. It's the second thing I want to say. And the third thing that comes out of this is that what Jesus does here is honor that is expressed in a very practical way. It isn't just words that Jesus offers here, although the words that we speak over each other are immensely important. It isn't just a matter of attitude, although our attitudes are absolutely vital, and if our attitudes are wrong, then everything else is going to be of the spout. But this is rolling your sleeves up, honor. This is towel round the waist and bowl in front of you, honor. This is hugely practical what Jesus does. And the context of this service is not public or glamorous. It's not doing anything very special. It's an ordinary thing that Jesus does. It's actually menial. And that's often where service costs. Actually, there are two dimensions of serving that I think we need to hold together as Christians. And I want to say a little bit about both of them this morning. The first dimension of service is when we use our gifts and we express our passion. One of life's adventures, and actually a key to unlocking the best that's in us, is to find and to use the gifts and the passion that God has put within us for all it's worth. And sometimes we can have a rather masochistic view of God. I mean, there are Christians who have a rather masochistic view of God, that because he wants our service for him to be sacrificial, he'll send us into stuff that we're completely unsuited for. That you're trained to be a doctor and God's calling will be to scrub floors. That your training might be that you're an accountant, but God's calling on your life is to be a checkout person at Tesco's or something like that. And we have this sort of masochistic thing that if you have a terrible fear of snakes, God will lead you to be a missionary in Africa. Whatever we want, God will be leading us somewhere else. And It only takes, I think, a moment to see just how crazy that is, and actually how unbiblical it is, because it's God who's put gifts inside us. And there is, as you will know, a strong New Testament teaching that he wants us to discover and use and serve each other with those gifts precisely. The gifts that we have got, not primarily the gifts that we haven't got. And I think last week, or was it 2 weeks ago, I was reading Romans, 2 weeks ago I think, reading Romans 12. And just to remind you of a little bit of that, I'll find it in a minute. Here we go. We have different gifts according to the grace that's given to us. If a man's gift is prophecy, let him use it in proportion of his faith. If it's serving, let him serve. If it's teaching, let him teach. Whatever your gift is, use the gift that God has given to you, is what Paul's saying. And there is a terrible waste involved when we don't use the best gifts and the strongest passions that God has put inside us. I wonder if you recognize the character that will come up on the screen in just a moment. If he comes up. Yes, here we go. Right. Well, I've put his name there, so you should recognize him. Back in 1903, I read this. I wasn't there. This guy was working in the Swiss Patent Office. He failed to get promotion. The reason for that was because his bosses thought he hadn't fully mastered machine technology. Maybe he wasn't cut out for science. His name, of course, Albert Einstein. And Albert Einstein, as you will know, used the equation at the bottom of the page to rewrite physics. Newtonian physics that had held sway for 150 years by then was turned on its head by Albert Einstein's theory of relativity. Crazy for the man to be stuck in a patent office when there's gifts and passion that can change the world. This person you may not recognize, he's not so easily recognizable, but her name is there, I think. So there's a parlor maid in London. If you think Downton Abbey, that's probably slightly posher than what she was doing, but similar. That was never the best that God had for her, because she had a passion for missions. She became a missionary to China. She actually became the subject of a major Hollywood film, which she hated, incidentally. Named Gladys Aylward. How crazy not to be using the gift and the passion that God put inside her. What a horrible, horrible waste if she had stayed serving as a parlor maid. And I want to say, therefore, too, is that it is right and good and it's important that we find and we use and we develop the things that we get excited about and the gifts that other people recognize in us. And we don't focus on the things that we can't do and the things that we don't feel excited about, but we focus on the things that we can do and the things that God has put inside of us. A little example of that, in Food Bank, we've got a number of folks on our teams, but one or two folks within our teams have a real gift for getting alongside guys who come in for food. They may not do a lot of packing or paperwork. And that's okay, because they used gifts that they've got. And it'd be crazy to be using folks who've got the ability to really get alongside the folks who come in and say, look, you should be doing paperwork. Crazy. Acts chapter 6, the early church is mushrooming. There's a whole lot of administration suddenly that needs doing. And it's a leadership role, of course. So it might seem obvious for the 12 disciples to do it. Obvious, but not clever. And the response that they come up with is this. Look, there's a lot that needs doing, but God has called us to the ministry of the word and to prayer. So you appoint folks who can do it instead. They focused on the thing that God had given them to do. And this morning, we want to present a whole series of opportunities to get involved in serving at Woody. There's outreach, there's kids and youth stuff, there's technical stuff, there's worship, there's all kinds of things that are open opportunities here. Not all of those will be right for you. One of them might be. And I want to encourage you, if you're not already engaged in significant Christian service here or elsewhere, to sign up and give at least one of them a try. And if it isn't for you, then that's great. You know? say, I'll give Sunday school a try, and after four sessions with the kids, you realise that you can't stand children. That's fine. Do something else. We're not asking anybody to sign their life away, and if you try something and it's not for you, you've not lost anything in the process. But if it is for you, then not only are you going to be blessing God's people by serving them, you'll also have discovered something in yourself. Now, Laura, of course, has preached about this whole business of using our gifts before and done so really helpfully. But I think it bears saying again, and this is the heart of it, pursue the best that God has put inside of you and make it count for God. That's the first dimension of service. There is another one. And you have to see this alongside it. And this is the second dimension of service, that we see what needs doing and we do it. Question. How many of the 13 men in that sweaty room felt that they had a gift or calling for washing feet? Well, we don't know for certain, but I'm pretty certain that the answer would be zero. How many folks here, and if you want to, you can stick your hands up. I'll be delighted to see a forest of hands here. How many folks here have a special gift and passion for stacking chairs? That's roughly the number I expected. For serving coffee, cleaning up the church, replenishing the photocopier when you've almost finished off the paper inside it. How many folks in the church feel that your God-given gift and calling is to take out the rubbish? Well, I may have missed somebody, but I don't see a single hand for any of those, and I'm not remotely surprised. But all of those things, of course, need doing. Otherwise, we would end up in a chaotic pigsty, which regrettably there are times when there's a passing resemblance at Woody. But there's a whole load of situations, is what I'm saying here, where it will not do for us to say, sorry, that's not my gift. Where it won't do for us to say, sorry, I don't have a passion for that. There are a whole lot of situations where the need constitutes the call, and where we need to see what needs to be done, and we just roll up our sleeves and get on with it. So I want to say, seek your passion, but be prepared for the menial stuff. Do the stuff that excites you, but don't shy away from the things that you find unattractive or not easy or not too interesting. Okay, that was a long point. The last one is a relatively short one. I want to make a fourth point about giving honour through serving, which doesn't arise directly from John 13, but is biblical, and it is, I think, important as well. And that is that honour through serving is about giving appreciation. Not demanding appreciation, but giving it. A culture of honour has to include a culture of appreciation. The Gospels tell us of an occasion when Jesus healed 10 lepers. One of them comes back to say thank you, and Jesus' response is, where are the others? Where are the others? Because appreciation is normal in the economy of God. It's something that should be happening. It's something that God expects to be happening. When you look at our relationship with the Lord, thanksgiving is central to our relationship with God. It's a core element in our prayer and our worship that we appreciate, we recognize, we pick up on, we notice the good things that God does for us. And we say, Lord, I am grateful for that. When I was growing up, my parents went to the Methodist church. And when I became a Christian, I went to the Baptist church. But my parents used to, I'm not saying that's always going to be a necessary result of becoming a Christian, in case there are Methodists here that I'm upsetting, but it was right where I lived. But I remember my parents sort of worrying over mealtimes, has X, Y, or Z been thanked for what they have done in the church? And I used to compare it with the Baptist church and say, well, you know, it's not a problem with us. People are not doing it for praise. They're doing it for God. We don't get hung up on being thanked. And I think I was a little bit supercilious, really, because, yeah, what we do for the Lord, even if we don't get human appreciation. And we should still be content to give our service for the Lord. But on the other side of that, a culture of honor is a culture that makes a point of appreciating other people. Appreciating, for instance, the sacrifices that are made by those who serve on a GAT team each year. The unsung heroes of our church. And it's recognizing each other's gifts and abilities. I read a bit from Romans 12. And in that passage, Paul is keen to encourage us to use our God-given gifts. But he's also saying, don't think too highly of what you've got. In other words, don't think that your gifts are the really important ones and everyone else is a second rate. Actually, value what the other guys bring to the party here. And in 1 Corinthians 12, he goes further than that. And I want to read a couple of verses from 1 Corinthians 12. He's talking about spiritual gifts of all kinds, which he compares to the different parts of a human body having different functions and stuff. And then he says in verse 21, the eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. The head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. But God has combined the members of the body and has given greater honor to the parts that lacked it. God has given greater honor to the parts that lacked it. Now, it is, I think, good and healthy to show appreciation to preachers, to elders, to worship leaders and folks like that. And I have to say, it's always encouraging to me if I know that I've said something that's been helpful to somebody. And I thank those who make a point of doing so. I mean, it is a real encouragement. But actually, it probably isn't the preachers. It probably isn't the worship leaders. It probably isn't even the elders who need appreciation in a community like this. We are already very prominent. What we do, people notice. Using Paul's language, what are the parts of the body that, quote, seem to be weaker? Which are the parts of the body, quote, lack honor? Well, I guess it's people who clean the church. It's Jane who beavers away all on her own in the church finances and nobody sees her doing it. It's folks who produce Woody Weekly. It's Sunday school teachers who serve our kids when we're not there and therefore what they're doing is invisible and it's possible for us not even to notice it. There's a whole army of you that we should be giving what Paul says special honor to. So let's be willing to serve, but at the same time recognize those who serve. And perhaps this week, just put a sort of practical point on this. Perhaps this week, make a point of noticing one of the hidden ministries at Woody and say a simple thank you to the person who does it. Notice something that you otherwise wouldn't. There is one other thing that I want to say this morning. We're encouraging each of us on what we're calling Sign Up Sunday, to get stuck into practical service today. For many of us, that will mean serving at Woody. Not for all of us. Not for all of us. I know that Chris is going to say it this, but I want you to hear it from both of us. Some of you are deeply involved in other ministries, and they're good ministries, they're valuable ministries, they're strategic ministries. It might be Revive, it might be a university Christian union. A guy in my previous church, one of the ministries that he has was that he was responsible to the management of his firm to represent his colleagues. He was doing it for the Lord. It was part of his Christian ministry. He did stuff in the church as well, but he didn't probably do as much stuff in the church as he would have done if he hadn't been doing that. And we need to recognize ministries that are nothing to do with Woody. And if God's called you to do stuff that is outside of this church, I'm not going to argue with that. Nobody here is going to argue with it. But this is Sign Up Sunday, when we want to present some of the great opportunities to serve here. Actually, come to that, some of the real needs that there are. There's no pressure, because I can tell you from Scripture that every Christian should be actively involved in honoring the Lord and honoring each other through serving. And I can tell you that because it's true. I'm not going to tell you that it's got to be here. The important thing is not that everybody serves in this place. The important thing is this morning that each of us picks up the challenge of Jesus. And we're able to say to the Lord, Lord, I'm willing to serve you. I want to serve you people. I want to honor you and your children. God, will you show me where and will you show me how? And I'll do it. I want to take just a moment that we can reflect this morning. And then Chris is going to outline the specifics of the sign up Sunday, and I'll hand over to him. I want us just to take a moment with God to review our service for the Lord. And it may be that you are in a position. There may be folks this morning who are doing so many things that none of them is actually being done to the very best. None of them is really being strategic because you're overstretched. And it is possible this morning that actually the Lord's saying to you, find the things that are really right for you. Find the things that you need to focus on so that you can do them with excellence and you can walk closely with me at the same time. And it is possible this morning that actually God's going to say, look, there's something that you can step down from, something that you can drop. I'm guessing that for others, there will be a situation where we're saying, well, I'm willing to serve, but I actually frankly don't know what my gifts are. I want to encourage you just to do two things this morning, I think. First of all, to say to the Lord, would you show me your calling on my life? Would you show me that? Will you show me where the passions are that I can pursue? Will you show me where there are gifts that you can really use and make strategic for your kingdom in my life, in me? And the second thing is just to say to the Lord, okay, I will start exploring. I'll start exploring and I'll try things and I'll see. And I think there may be some of us that we may be doing stuff. We may not yet be doing anything in terms of Christian service. And God is speaking to us and saying that he wants us to be servants. He wants us to have a ministry. And very simply, I want to encourage you to lay that before the Lord and say, okay, God, what and where and how? Because if you're calling, I'll do it. Lord Jesus, would you take the word that you spoke all those years ago and maybe the word that you're speaking this morning and would you let it germinate and work in our hearts until it produces a fruit, until it produces the result that you're seeking from it. In your precious name, Lord Jesus, we ask that. Amen.